Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
All right, perfect transition here. So we go from Meta World Peace, who was drafted in 1999 by the Chicago Bulls, to Scott Gleason of the USA Today has an article right now. Bulls would have had trouble winning in 1999 if they all came back. Scott, thank you for taking the time and working with us on that time. So sorry, apologize here as we kind of shifted things.
Hey, it's great to join you guys. Appreciate you having me.
Thank you. No, I appreciate you taking the time as well. So, one of the questions that I just go right off the bat here in your article, USA Today, Bulls would have had trouble winning in 1999. What do you think would have been, or would have presented, some of the bigger challenges of the Bulls trying to bring everybody back and winning their fourth straight championship, and obviously trying to defend that crown? They were 6-0 and never got a chance to defend it.
Right. So, I mean, I feel like the documentary was such an awesome experience for sports fans to take in, not just, you know, an amazing team that we're seeing from afar, but the personalities and the human side of that team, right? And so that, in a lot of ways, in my mind, is what would stand in the way of them winning in 98, 99. Jordan was, I think, he wasn't necessarily at his prime. He maybe thought he was, but ultimately, I think he was probably wiser than he ever was in his career, and he found ways to be dominant at an MVP level, you know, later in his career by not necessarily with athleticism, but by just outsmarting players. So Jordan was at the top of his game in a lot of ways, but to me, the ultimate reason is Pippen. I don't think Scottie Pippen comes back. There were wounds there that had a lot to do with Jerry Krause. And when you consider that, I mean, I don't see Jordan winning another title unless Scottie Pippen's alongside him, you know. And then the other big thing in my mind is you're looking at the trajectory of the NBA at that point. We know all about how the big man started to change the game in the early 2000s, you know, and Duncan and David Robinson in 99, I think people look at that season as like, oh, this is a lockout year. It was 50 games, whatever. They won a title. I mean,
they underestimated it a little bit
to stop. Would have been tough for the Bulls to stop. They did not have a dominant big man, you know, and so I think that was the changing point, I think, right there at the turning of the millennium. And if Pippen's not on that team, I think I don't see the Bulls winning. If he is, I think it's a little bit of a different ball game. But keep in mind, too, the momentum of that 97-98 team, because they were just, you know, completely exhausted. The momentum there had everything to do with, this is our last run. This is our last hurrah, right? When you're on the home stretch, you have that motivation.
Yeah, it seemed like Scott Gleason from USA Today joining the Slava Show. It seemed like Scott, I mentioned this on a couple different occasions, that, you know, typically by the time you get to winning your third championship in a row, you're trying to find ways to continue to motivate yourself.
And
you saw that in the documentary a lot, where Jordan was finding just different ways to convince himself that another player disrespected him, or that maybe his motivation was Krause trying to break up the Chicago Bulls. But it did feel, at least in 98, I mean, Phil Jackson is holding up the last dance before the season even starts, so it did feel like they were all under the same understanding. Pippen ended up signing with the Rockets, right? And that was a five-year deal.
Well, so he finally got his payday with the Rockets, and then he goes to the Blazers the next season, right? So, I mean, the money started reeling in for Pippen as he was declining in his career, which, you know, is interesting how it works in that way. But it was also a lot of the things that were changing with the salary that had a lot to do with the lockout. But, I mean, you think about it.
Hey, Scott, we're losing you there, buddy. We'll see if we can get Scott back. The line's breaking up right there. I'll say that, Scott, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me okay?
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Pippen ultimately, he had probably 4 or 5 more years that he was going to be at a decent, solid, mediocre level. He wasn't at the top 5 player level that he was at, but he had 4 or 5 more good years, and I think he showed some of that playing for Portland as, you know, third, fourth best player on the team.
So when we look at the Eastern Conference, so we're trying to take people back, with the Chicago Bulls, would they have trouble winning in that 98-99 season? This was a shortened season. It was 50 games. NBA had its lockout. And they would be going for four championships in a row. How was the competition in the East, just getting out of the Eastern Conference? What was it looking like back then?
Right. So, I mean, the Eastern Conference, we got to think about it, because that lockout season really kind of it threw things off. You had that year a number 8 seed Knicks team going all the way to the championship. But I still think the Pacers were good. And I think the whole ball game changes, too, if Jordan's still playing. You know, when you think about that season, 1998-1999, the East was, I think, not as good. I mean, most teams were not as good as they were in the early 90s. But you're also looking at a different motivation factor that kicks in when you're trying to take down the Bulls. And I think that the Pacers were great when Larry Bird coached them. You know, everyone, you know, sees Reggie and a lot of things about that team that were so great. You know, Larry Brown was a Hall of Fame coach, and he couldn't get it done with that same type of team. And really, I think, like, Larry Bird turned things around for Indiana. So the East was tough. I mean, just it wasn't at its best. I think it was the case in the early 90s. You know, with Pistons, and obviously that was probably what we were seeing with the Patrick Ewing Knicks. That was when they were at their elite level.
Scott Gleason of the USA Today has got a good article right now. Bulls would have had trouble winning in 1999. That's been a lot of the conversation. I don't know if you saw this earlier. Jackie McMullen had put this out on ESPN that Scottie Pippen didn't feel that the portrayal on this docuseries, I'll read exactly what he said. The words he used was wounded and disappointed. Did you walk away with that perception of Scotty? I don't know. I didn't. I thought there are obviously some highs and lows for Pippen in the 10-part series. But how did you walk away with your thoughts on Scotty?
Well, I mean, I think it was just sort of a recasting of what already happened. It's just in real time now when you have the social media era here in the 2020. That stuff was out there. You know, the fact that Pippen sat out, right? I mean, I think that was the biggest thing that really kind of stood out, the contract thing and everything like that. We always have to look at how Pippen is portrayed as compared to Michael. And so I think if you're looking at it in that perspective, I could see a little bit of where Scottie might have felt some of that woundedness, because, I mean, keep in mind here, Jordan did have some of the control in terms of how this was produced. I don't think that it doesn't sound as though that he was, you know, hovering over and saying, put this in and don't put this in. I didn't get that perspective. It felt like there was a lot of truth-telling, but it was very Jordan was the star, right? And they did spend a lot of time going into the Kukoc story and going into the Rodman story and going into the Pippen story. But I think if I'm Scotty and I'm knowing, you know, that I'm at that elite level, you know, playing alongside Jordan, I'm thinking I should get a little bit more time on there, right? I should get a little bit more of the insight into my personality and to what makes me tick. We explored a ton of that with Jordan. We did not get a lot of that with Pippen. And I think, like, if you make the comparison, it's like if you're going to make a documentary and you're going to focus only on Kobe and not on Shaq, I mean, this is a completely different comparison. But I think that's how Pippen might feel in some ways, is that Jordan's the best player of all time, but hey, I'm still a top three player this whole time while it's happening. It's not like he's this ultimate sidekick that's like a top 15 player. He was top five. I mean, he was that good. And Jordan said in his Hall of Fame speech, he doesn't win a title unless Scottie's playing with him.
And I'm with him, by the way. I think that's, that's the ultimate compliment that he can give to Scottie Pippen. But listen, I guess I just, I'm curious if more of these players start opening up with their opinion now since the docuseries is over. We heard Horace Grant today, right? Horace Grant went on a rant about, I think he said 90% of what Jordan was saying was inaccurate. I don't know what specifically he was referring to, but he obviously was very passionate about how he was portrayed. He was passionate about there's certain moments of the docuseries, like you mentioned. I think a lot of people feel this way. Jordan definitely had an incredible say on everything that went out. Sure. But do you think that will happen? I mean, do you think that? We got to understand this is for entertainment, you know, consumption. But do you think there are a lot of players that were either a part of that Bulls team? We heard Isaiah Thomas, and we know how long those conversations lasted. Do you think that it wasn't a full portrayal of, I don't know, I guess you could say this back and forth. I mean, I don't know if this was supposed to be a journalistic piece or this was supposed to be a combination of a series.
Well, I kind of look at it from two perspectives. I mean, one is you have to look at it from the sports fan lens, right? Which is that, you know, for a lot of people in the younger generation, they didn't get a full scope and full feel for who Michael Jordan was. And he really did have that, I think, like global power back in the day. And that sort of carried over. I think that's why he had the leverage to do what he did. And, you know, it takes 20 years for it to essentially be produced. That's one side of it, right? Just the whole sports fan. And you've got, I think even, you know, people from, they were taking it in back in the 90s. You get to see the personality side of it too. But when I think about, you know, the journalistic side of it and it being produced, if I'm some of these players like Isaiah Thomas, you know, Gary Payton, you know, in the Horace Grants of the world, right? Like, I'm going to feel a little bit ticked. Yeah. Because ultimately think about how it played out in the documentary. You know, they would say something and then, you know, Jason Heer, the director, would give Jordan the iPad, and those made for some of the funniest, or, you know, I guess like best moments of the documentary. But that just goes to show, you know, like, you're not getting the last say if you're John Stockton. You're not getting the last say if you're Scottie Pippen. Everyone else is a supporting, you know, character in this. This is as much a Jordan documentary as it is a Bulls documentary. I mean, that's the presence he commanded in the 90s, and I think he earned it to have that power for this documentary. But you also have to consider the people who obviously did not get their full voice. It's like you turn the microphone off when they go to say the last part of the speech.
Scott Gleason, USA Today. Scott, final question. Is there another sports dynasty out there, and it could be you know, any sport, it doesn't have to just be the NBA, that you'd love to see this type of documentary where it's a, you know, more than a two-part, three-part series, but kind of an extended version? Is there a team that sticks out to you that you think would be interesting, that would get maybe not this much success, but definitely a lot of attention?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big basketball guy, so I'm sure there are, like, if we're considering the whole full scope of sports, there's plenty out there. But, I mean, I would have loved, and I think we get spoiled with this type of situation, because there was a lot of foresight into making a documentary where you've got all this access. But, I mean, I would just love to be in a locker room with Kobe and Shaq, right? I mean, just to see those personalities and everything that happened with the Lakers, because I think people really got to understand about Phil Jackson is, of course, you're looking at him as a coach, but, like, he was the ultimate manager of personalities, right? And I think that was one of the coolest takeaways I took from the documentary with the Bulls, that I think we know carried over with the Lakers, with both Kobe's Lakers and then the Kobe and Shaq Lakers. It's just this idea of how Jackson was able to manage egos and to really, I think, like, unify such a different cast of players and with the same goal. I mean, it just speaks to Jackson's brilliance as far as being able to reach players and connect them.
Well, that's mine too, Scott. I've been talking about that these last couple of weeks. That to me would be the best to follow the Shaq and the Kobe days. Scott, sure. I appreciate your time. I thank you for doing this. And it's a great article on USA Today right now. Bulls would have had trouble winning in 1999. Scott, thanks for joining the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. Have a good one.
All right, man. Thank you. Thank you. You too. Halftime coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, we got to welcome back Curtis. Curtis back in the house. Curtis, how are we doing over there?
It's nice to be back.
Good to be back.
A little thrown off, but it's all right.
All right, you feeling all good?
Yo, yeah. It's more of a, like, oh, I got to work now.
Yeah.
Kind of vibe.
Back to reality here. You got to
Back to life, back to reality. I'm good. I'm here at home. It's weird because I'm looking outside and it's still daylight a little. Mm-hmm. It always throws me off when it's late because the day always flies by. I have the door open for most of the day, and, like, by the time it hits 5, I'm, like, looking outside and it's like the sun's still out, and I think it's still like 3.
Well, you know what's kind of crazy? These days, I mean, just because we're, you know, obviously trying to put together the show and trying to figure out, okay, well, content-wise, what will be interesting, get the right sound. The days kind of fly by. I mean, Monday through Friday, I think we have – do we have this Monday off, this upcoming Monday?
We do. We have Monday off for Memorial Day. Curtis, so, definitely knew that.
Curtis, well, any extra day off, you know I know it.
Curtis, I'll tell you, man. I mean, just because we've been going this Monday through Friday, and then I was doing for 5 weeks that Sedano thing him and I were doing after the Last Dance on Twitter – Not going to lie. Nice to have a 3-day weekend coming up. So I know that's going to be nice. Okay, let's get things started. Curtis, why don't you go first, bud?
All right. So today, a couple hours ago, per the mayor of LA, Eric Garcetti, as of today, there are all pet groomer businesses and car washes are allowed to reopen, at least in LA. Usually when this happens here in LA, every other county follows suit. So I kind of wanted to ask you guys, I'm really big, like right now, my car was super dirty the other day and it was making me really mad because we don't have very good water where I live. So you can't really wash it very well. But I'm really big on cleaning my car and keeping it clean and all that. But I want to see what is your guys' approach when it comes to car washes, keeping your car clean? Do you do that? Is that something you do? Or do you just kind of wipe the dirt off the windshield?
You pulled a Sliwa. You said guys's. That was great.
Did I?
I
had a week off. It's fine.
My impact is rolling on you. Jeff, what
give your thoughts.
Your car clean?
Hess? Who's Jeff? Come on, Sliwa.
What?
You said Jeff.
No, I said Jess.
No, bro, you said Jeff.
What is going on?
Go back to the thing. It's Jess. Do you wash your car all the time? No, I let it go.
I'm always one to let it go, to be honest. I'm always like, you know, I always have something else to do, and it's always on the back burner for me, and it's terrible. And my mom always lets me has it because she's very nitpicky and very, you know, keep your car clean. I try to. I mean, it runs perfectly fine. It just may look a little dirty every now and then. But I think once it opens up, I might have to go just because it's definitely been a minute since I've had a good actual car, like hand car wash.
The self-services have been open this whole time, but this is more the actual big car washes, because those self-services, honestly, it's just putting spots on your windshield. So
doesn't it happen like this? Don't you think it's like, I mean, maybe this is a bad example, or maybe it's a good example, but let's use haircuts as an example, right? Barbershops, salons, all these places have been closed. So it's kind of been an excuse to say, all right, I'm going to let my hair, you know, grow out. Or if you're looking at your car, this is how I've approached my car. I like to have a clean car, but that doesn't mean I always have a clean car. When the lockdown started and all the car washes were closed, my car just looked awful. And my car is white, too. So it's like, okay, well, you know, you could definitely tell the way it looks. So in San Diego, I was there about a week and a half ago just visiting family, and there were car washes were open in San Diego County. So you could go up to one of those car washes. Now there was, you know, if you go vacuum, if you want to clean the inside of your car, it's different. It's every other car now. So there's one parking spot that has a cone there. So, you know, you're not going to be right next to the car next to you.
Ah.
My car was so dirty that by the time I like ran my car through the car wash, it just looked like a regular dirty car, not a, you know what I mean?
It was like a pre-soak. It wasn't really a wash.
Exactly. It was like, okay, well, you're going to go run it again. I'm like, no, this is good enough. For me, it just kind of piles up. But now that the car washes are back, yeah, I mean, you got to get your car through there every once in a while. I definitely haven't taken care of my car like I should.
So are we all paying for the car washes, not doing it on our own here? Guessing?
Yep. I'm paying.
So I could, if I want to, at my place, I could wash it outside, or I could wash it anytime I'm down in San Diego. I haven't washed my car in years.
It's difficult to do it right, too, especially yourself, because most people do it in the sun and all that, and it ruins it.
People like it. Like, you know, a friend of mine, she always washes her own car. And listen, like I said, there's certain people that's what they do. Like, they love – there's an appreciation for washing the car. I was just never one of those.
Yeah, same. You know, I know people who will – you know, they will take 2, 3, 4 hours of their time to make sure they give their car a good, deep hand wash, wax on, wax off, everything detailed, and all to you. But that's just I was never one of that. However, if I had, you know – a car that I felt that way towards, I think I'd do it just because, you know,
that could change it. That's true.
It's definitely going to come with your relationship on the car too. And if, you know, is that like your first brand new car you bought? If that's like your dream car. So it definitely comes to circumstances like that. I definitely don't fault you if you're one of those people.
Is it just me, or I always get upsold at the car wash always? I mean, I get up, so like I come in like, all right, I just want a basic wash. I want to get in, get out. Next thing you know, he's like, you know, this was going to be $32, but for you, my friend, it's $24.99. I'm like, what's happening?
Yes,
here?
Bro.
I thought I was going to spend $10, and the next thing I know, I'm walking in. They got me for a good 25. Does that happen to you guys, or am I the only one that gets upsold at the car wash?
No, that's how they make their money, because you don't really make a lot doing the actual wash. It's all the add-ons with the, because I know most places, they'll charge you $50-$60 just for like a shampooing of your carpet, let's say. Yeah, when you can, yeah, you can get a can of that for like $12. You just got to do it yourself and put the elbow grease in. But yeah,
and you're gonna have that $12 can of it or whatever, that bottle will last for like 2 years.
Yeah, everyone pays for the premium yeah, for it, but it's just one of those things.
I pay for the premium drive through. That's what I do.
The $12 one, not the $8 one.
No, $12 one all the way, son. And you know what? When I'm feeling really, you know, like I'm on a good roll, I go for the 15.
That's when you got that extra check coming in. So
that's my stimulus check money right there.
All right, so I want to ask you guys real quick. Last Dance ends obviously on Sunday. 10-part documentary. Everybody's still talking about it, and I think this is going to probably go on for quite a while. I don't know what we would have done Monday through Friday for the last 5 weeks if we didn't have this as part of a conversation. But long story short, now that it ended and you guys got a chance to kind of take a step back, Jess, do you got something that stands out for you, your favorite moment during the docuseries, or some kind of storyline that stood out to you most?
Everything that came across with Dennis Rodman, I absolutely love. I love that everything that Meta said about Rodman, which definitely speaks to his growth as a player. You can definitely tell that Rodman was a big influence on Meta as an actual player. But I loved everything about him just because he's that ecstatic character. And you know what? He got away with it because he delivered on the court. And I think that's something that a lot of people miss is, yeah, there's some players that do weird stuff. They're not, you know, they're not like into the, they're not, I don't want to say there, but I don't want to say they're not normal, but they're just different. You know, their personalities, their characters. But at the end of the day, if you're able to deliver, you know, do your job, like, you know, you want to go to...
That's why they were okay with it. By the way, that's why they were okay with it.
Yeah. You want to go appear on Monday Night Nitro and wrestle against Diamond Dallas Page and Hulk Hogan? Go for it. Just make sure you're back tomorrow ready for game 3. And you know what? He did it. And you know what? I commend him more so for this. Yeah, he got fined $20,000 for not leaving and all that. Guess how much he made for that appearance on WCW?
What did he make?
Just take a wild guess. $250,000.
There you go.
So you know what? Yeah,
that, my friends, is a good business decision. But listen, again, I'll go back to this. And I like when you highlight Rodman, because for me, there's so many different storylines, and Dennis was unique. And how great was it for Meta to appreciate what Dennis came from and his whole story to then, you know, get to it on the national stage, and he's delivering on the basketball court. At the end of the day, are you getting your job done or are you not? And he was getting his job done. So there was this like understanding amongst the team and the coaching staff that if Dennis Rodman is going to go to Vegas for freaking 48 hours with Carmen Electra in the middle of, you know, a season or playoff run, whatever it was, he's going to do it. But then he's going to eventually come back and he's going to grab every rebound and he's going to hustle better than anybody else. And he's going to dive on the floor for every loose ball. So that is one of my favorites. Curtis, what's a moment that stands out to you?
Well, I think with all of it, it's more, since we didn't get to see, you know, in that time, we didn't have social media, we didn't have all that stuff. You heard about Jordan's partying and all that, but when you actually got to see the footage of that kind of stuff, it really kind of brings it out there, because it's like, man, you can't get away with anything now. So just the fact that he got away with so much and still balled out, it's crazy.
Well, I will look on the Jordan part, and I think there's been a lot of kind of chatter and conversation about Jordan saying, okay, well, this guy obviously had final say on everything. I've been hearing that conversation the last couple of days. You can break it down any way you want. There's nobody like Michael Jordan. There will never be anybody like Michael Jordan. And, you know, his success in the NBA to go 6-0 in the finals, I was mentioning this yesterday to Mason in Ireland. Just think about this, Curtis. Think about Reggie Miller and that Pacers team, they never got a chance to win a championship because of Michael. The Knicks team with Patrick Ewing, John Starks, Anthony Mason, Charles Oak, they never got a shot. Sean Kemp and Gary Payton, they didn't get one in Seattle. Clyde Drexler in Portland, Karl Malone and John Stockton. I'm not talking about just random players. I'm talking about Hall of Fame players that never won a championship. Reggie Miller with the Pacers because of Jordan. This kind of conversation about Michael Jordan, and maybe he gets even some negative press. The guy played to win, and that's exactly what he did. My favorite story of the Last Dance, Scottie Pippen. I loved everything about Scottie. I love that, you know, even like the story about the play was drawn up for Kukoc in 94, and Pippen says, I'm not going to come in. I'm not saying I liked him doing it, but I liked them talking about it. I think Pippen, at times, you're like, wow, this guy was one of the most underappreciated athletes of all time. And then there's other times where I'm like, damn, Scottie, that's not a good decision for your team. And you had these up and downs with Scottie. So Scottie's my that's the one that stands out to me from The Last Dance. Jesse, what do you got?
But before I go on, aren't you disappointed that they didn't highlight Pitt's smack-talking Karl Malone? I was disappointed at that.
Okay, so last week, was it on Friday?
It was on Friday.
Yep, we brought on
David Fleming.
David Fleming from ESPN. And he had an article that talked about one of the, you know, I guess most influential trash-talking moments, what would have happened if this didn't occur. So we saw Jordan in the docuseries. This was in 1997, game one against the Utah Jazz. So it was their first championship run against the Jazz. Game one, Karl Malone steps up to the line. Game tied at 82, 9 seconds left. Scottie Pippen goes right in front of Karl Malone and says, the mail doesn't deliver on Sundays, whatever he said, right? Like these six words that he said. Malone misses both free throws. Jordan comes back on the other end, buzzer beater, and that kind of, you know, can easily have swung the series. I'm with you, Jess. I wish they talked a little bit about that. They never did.
Yeah, that definitely had a chance for that. That could have been Pip's moment of all documentary, you know. But
Can you just think of all the footage they had that didn't get in?
Oh, there's tons. To be honest, even that last episode kind of felt a little rushed compared to how the rest of the episodes. But I mean, considering the fact that they rushed, like we still had like maybe a couple weeks before the first episode was originally supposed to premiere. So, you know, maybe I've been backtracked. Overall, it was good. I definitely felt that last one was a little rushed, and that was probably definitely one of the casualties that they, you know, the producers and the directors had to be like, you know what? It's just one of the things we have to cut. It's not it wasn't a part of the actual big picture. But, you know, I'm sure somewhere down the line, you know, even a 30 for 30 about that would be great. So I'm sure somewhere down the line that's going to come up.
You know what they should do?
It's too big not to bring it up.
You know what they should do? They should do another one without Jordan and let all the other ones talk from their perspective.
Ooh, that's a good one.
And just have like, you know, yeah, this was Jordan's perspective on this, but this was my perspective, and just kind of see a little bit more from the other side.
Definitely. All right. So moving on, Alan, I got some trickery for you.
What do you got?
So this a Philadelphia resident, her name goes Kendall Neff. They ordered food delivery from a place called Pasquale's Pizza and Wings.
Okay, already sounds delicious.
Pizza and wings, you can't go wrong with that. Mm-hmm. However, they were trying to look for reviews to see how it was, and they couldn't really find anything. So they grabbed the address, they put it in Google Maps. And what do they find? That it is actually the address of a Chuck E. Cheese.
Okay.
So what had happened was one was ordering Chuck E. Cheese through Grubhub. So they decided to change their name to Pasquale's Pizza and Wings.
Oh, my God.
So people can think it's a new restaurant. And
that's not a good idea.
It's essentially Chuck E. Cheese pizza.
Okay.
So they thought they could rebrand, and it's the what is it? Lost the name here. The the parent company for Chuck E. Cheese sent out a press release, and they're like, no, this is a new independently launched thing, blah, blah, blah. But no, okay. Everyone's like,
were they trying to pull a fast one?
Yeah, they were. So I was going to ask you, Alan, if you had ordered food, let's say from a place called Mickey D's, and you thought this was the new fast food chain that's going to rival McDonald's, but it turns out they're just delivering you McDonald's and it's a different name, how would you feel? Would you feel duped? Would you be mad and be like, what the hell?
We don't even have to go that far. Let's just think of when you're about to order pizza and wings. Curtis, I don't know about you, but I've definitely ordered my fair share of wings and pizza in my life. If I thought I was getting it from this, new restaurant that sounds, by the way, the name of that restaurant sounds like it's going to be some good pizza and wings, and it was coming from Chuck E. Cheese, that's so jacked up. That is so jacked up to be – I mean, it would be the equivalent – this is a bad example, but you think you're getting like an In-N-Out style hamburger, but it's actually coming from, I don't know, some
Burger King or Carl's Jr.
Like
an awful, like that.
Like a small chain that nobody cares about. Like, that's a terrible, terrible look. Not good with that. So are they getting a lot of backlash for it? I hope they're getting a lot of backlash.
It's not really a whole lot of like real bad like backlash. Just this, the internet and Twitter and everyone's kind of like, yeah, you're not fooling me anymore. We all know what you're trying to do. But here's the real big icing. Yeah,
but what's going to happen? Are people going to be like, well, I'm never ordering pizza and wings from Chuck E. Cheese again? They weren't ordering pizza.
Clearly, no one was ordering anything.
Yeah, so I don't think it's going to happen. I think they're just going to wait till they open. Because to be honest, Chuck E. Cheese pizza isn't that bad. From what I remember, I haven't had it in years.
Their food's actually. I think it's the idea that
there
it's
go.
Because
yes, there we go.
It's
now the, we got
it,
some
it
fans.
It is.
It's but, the fact that it's the kids' place, and you think, oh. It's going to be gross cardboard or
okay,
whatever.
Okay, can we actually just figure out what is a place like that going to do? Like, how can they possibly open up again? How? Just think about it. Like, I always, this is before COVID-19, but I always thought, they have that area where, they got all the, what's that thing called? Where all the kids jump into the balls.
The playpen.
The playpen, right?
The playpen and the tubes and all that. Ball pit.
Yeah.
I love those things as a child.
I'm with you, right? As a kid, I was like, oh my gosh, it's the greatest thing ever. But can you just imagine how dirty that is?
This just
happens, right? Like, you got kids, they're running around, they're touching their nose, they're eating food, and then they're jumping in there. Like, how are you going to have places like that stay open with all this that's going on? It's almost like the buffets. Remember we talked about the buffets? Like, how are you going to do that?
Yeah, I don't think you can. I think what's going to happen for, places like that, specifically Chuck E. Cheese, is maybe turn into an arcade, because at least, you can clean and sanitize, the standard old school arcade games way easier than an entire playpen where there's tubes and like just thinking about that is hard. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to create this thing where it has like a wipe on like around you, just kind of like, no, there's no way. There's no way that in today's era of social distancing that something like that could survive. I mean, we might be wrong. They might somehow commit to like having set times. Maybe they'll be like, all right, you have the playpen from noon to three, and then, from 6 to 9, it's someone else or something like that. But I don't really see it.
Yeah, I don't see it too.
The big icing on the cake in this entire thing is Pasquale. That's the name of the chef.
I gotta look this up.
Of Chuck E. Cheese.
I was gonna say, he's the one that, like I think he's in their universe.
He's a part of the universe. He's the chef with the mustache.
Get out of here. This is not real. This is not a real story.
I think he looks like Mario.
He kind of does.
Like Super Mario.
He kind of looks like Mario. He has no eyes.
I see the picture right now.
Yep. I think that's the cherry on top of this story, is that they did it like that. So they switched it like right in front of our noses, and no one really even blinked an eye until they.
That's like copying all the homework wrong. That's really bad.
Pasquale's Pizza and Wings. Can I just say I like the name?
It's a good name.
What's an Italian
pizza
guy?
Pasquale's.
And I'm figuring in my head, like, when I hear that, I'm like, damn right I want pizza from there. Damn right I want some wings from there. Of course I do. Oh my gosh, that is That is an interesting story. This is, by the way, this is a perfect time, and this is for both of you, and I got to do the same thing. For halftime, these are great things to talk about. I know sometimes I just get stuck, and I'm doing just the sports part, but Jess, that's a great grab. And then, you know, Kurt is doing the car wash stuff. That's another great idea there.
Who would have thought Chuck E. Cheese would have been the catalyst for, hey, let's keep doing this.
What if Chuck E. Cheese's stock just skyrocketed? Like they're onto something. Man, what a bad look.
Awful
look for these guys.
Oh, right, Chuck,
anything else?
That's all we got for you, Alan.
All right, guys. Appreciate it. Thank you. Let's do this when we come back. Tillman Fertitta, who is the Houston Rockets owner, was a part of this White House roundtable, and he had some positive things about potentially a return to the NBA. Let's hear from him on that front. And then also, since we're on the subject of pizza, I don't know if you guys got this, if you guys heard Craig Fight, MJ's pizza delivery guy from Game 5 of the 1997 NBA Finals on 1280 The Zone. We're going to play that because he has a different story than what Michael Jordan pointed out. And the fact that this pizza story continues to get run is also a sign that we are in the middle of no sports. So we'll do all that coming up next. Appreciate you guys tuning in. This is The Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Always get upsold on the car washes. Always. Always.
Don't pay for the wax. That's the ripoff.
No, it's not even just the wax. It's they get me with like, you know, we'll shine your tires. I don't know. They just use all these terms. They throw me off, Curtis. I'm walking in with a $12 game plan. Next thing I know, we're at 27 and I feel like I got a good deal because he told me just because it's me and he's never met me before, I'm his friend all of a sudden. And that's why somebody else was going to pay 40. And I'm like, I think you've used that line before.
What's your air freshener scent? Are you a cotton candy guy?
Definitely not. I'm actually not crazy about the air freshener. They're too strong. Like some of them I like if they're the ones that you put, the ones they give you that, you know, they'll give it to you for free or maybe you spend a couple extra bucks, you put them in there. I'm like, this is the most powerful thing ever. It took over the entire car.
What you got to do, the best, you know, the air freshener that the car wash gives you, no, those don't work. The best air freshener, no, the best ones you can find, and I will stick to these, and I've tried multiple ones, and the best ones are the Febreze ones that you buy, and then you just kind of stick. You can buy them like at an 8-pack at Costco. Yep. I usually buy them when they're on sale. They have your car smelling clean. Your car may look filthy, dirty.
But it smells good inside.
But it smells fan. It smells like a basket of fresh laundry.
Okay, so I want to play this. This it's kind of hilarious that this pizza story just kind of continues. So yesterday, I was trying to think about this, and I'm doing Lakers talk yesterday. Funches and I are talking, and I'm sitting back. I'm like, okay, so let me understand this. How does somebody get to Jordan's room? I mean, we're talking about Michael Jordan in 1998. Maybe it was 97. I think it was 97. We're talking about Michael Jordan at his absolute peak. And you're going to tell me that a pizza guy at a hotel that the team is staying at can just go right up to his room, that somebody at the hotel tells him, yep, that's where Michael Jordan is staying. That's his room. And there's five guys, as you know, Michael mentioned it. And Jordan's the only one to eat the pizza. Look, I don't question that he had food poisoning or he had the flu or whatever he had. Watch him play in that game. It is one of the most remarkable games, and it's one of my favorite games to watch as a basketball fan. Here's this guy that is just struggling. You know when you could tell when somebody's sick? You just kind of look at their face, and you could tell, or their body language. You're like, yeah, that guy does not look like he's in good shape, or you know, somebody at work or something along those lines. You could just tell when they're sick. Jordan looked like that. The difference was Jordan wasn't walking into the station, sitting on, you know, a chair for 8 hours like I do at the station. He was going to play in one of the most important games, the game five on the road against the Utah Jazz in an NBA Finals. So I don't question that he was sick. I don't question that that was, you know, the flu game or now the stomach poisoning game, whatever you want to call it. Those times where Pippen is embracing him, where he's just kind of holding him up, it's powerful. It's that's the drama that we're looking for as sports fans. But there's also another story to this. Craig Fight, who is supposedly Michael Jordan. It's just funny to talk about the story. Michael Jordan's pizza delivery guy from Game 5 of the NBA Finals on 1280 The Zone tells a little bit different of a story.
I said, you know what? I had just started there about 3 or 4 weeks early. I'd been hired as an assistant manager. And I go, oh, well, I'm delivering it. In fact, I may have been the manager on duty. I shouldn't have left the store. I don't know. I could have gotten in trouble for that. I was like, hey, I will make the pizza. And I remember saying this. I will make the pizza because I don't want any of you doing anything to it. And I said, and then I told the driver, I said, you're going to take me there. Everybody knows they were staying at the base of in Park City at the Main Street down where the Marriott had just been built. It wasn't too old at that time. So from there, you have to go in through security. And I'll be nice since I'm on the radio. Since the crap story that the guy said that there were five people, there was two of us, and I didn't even have that many people working. Both of us are in uniform, and it's clear where we're coming from. Walk in, security guy looks at us, says, great, go ahead, going in. So I go ahead, and obviously the pizza has basically never left me. It's been around me the whole time. And so we get into there, and as soon as you walk into the room or into the building, you could start already smell the cigar smoke. Anyway, we get up there, and boy, as soon as that door opened, I mean, it felt like, you know, got punched in the face with cigar smoke. But I remember one of the players saying, oh, hey, pizza. And they, who's that for? And I said, I don't know. It's room, and I can't remember the room number, but I said, it's room this. And they went, oh, for Mike. Oh, leave it alone. And then this great guy who's been saying all this crap lately, I'm sure he's a good guy, but anyway, he answers the door, barely opens up the door and looks out and said, and I said, hey, identify the company I was with, and here's the pizza delivery. And I'm handing him the pizza, and I said, hey, can I at least say hi to Mike? The door kind of opens up a little bit more. Mike's in the room sitting at the chair. He's playing cards or whatever, and raises his hand. He said, thanks, man. And then the guy looked at me and shut the door, and that's the extent of the whole story.
All right, this is typically where I raise suspicion, and we're on this. We're, you know, we're investigative reporters here in the evening, and we're going to get to the bottom of this. But usually when somebody says, well, I made sure to make it myself because I didn't want anybody else to do anything to it, right off the bat, don't you just start getting suspicious about, well, why would anybody even think you're going to do something to his pizza? Okay, that's question number one. The second thing is, who in their right mind would be calling in? And let's say it's, I think this was a Pizza Hut or something along those lines in Utah. Who in their right mind would be calling in and saying, yeah, hey, just want to order a pizza for Michael Jordan, who's in the middle of the NBA Finals versus the Utah Jazz. This is probably one of the most important events ever in Salt Lake City. Michael Jordan, the greatest player, he needs a pizza. And then he can go through security. First of all, he can make the pizza, go through security, and then go all the way up to the hotel room and hand deliver a pizza to Michael Jordan. Ask the guys, hey, can I give a quick wave to Michael? I mean, listen, I'm not here to try and figure out whose story is accurate or not. But just the mere fact that this became, I liked it so much more when it was just the flu game. I liked it more when I didn't know anything else, when it was just the flu game. Just roll with the flu game. That's not the case anymore. Okay, here's another individual, but this a teammate of Michael Jordan. And this was a big story over the last, you know, few hours. It was Horace Grant with Cap and Company on ESPN 1000 Chicago. Horace Grant had several moments in that documentary. And first of all, I didn't start the show off with this, which I know a lot of people are talking about this today because I really want to talk about the baseball front of things. But I did save this because I knew I was going to get to it a little bit later. Horace Grant was not feeling this documentary, wasn't feeling it at all. He's actually asking the question, why was it called a so-called documentary?
When that, so-called documentary is about one person, basically. And he has the last word on what's going to be put out there. What's going to be put out there? It's not a documentary. It's his narrative of what happened in the last quote-unquote dance. That's not a documentary because a whole bunch of things was cut out, edited out. So that's why I call it a so-called documentary.
I'm not going to lie. I was surprised to hear all these comments from Horace Grant today. And I've heard over the last couple of weeks, I've heard, you know, some reporters that have joined the show, or I've read articles where they say, okay, well, this really isn't a documentary because Jordan is just kind of giving his count, right? His side of the story. It's not like it's Jordan on the other side of the table with somebody else and they're going back and forth, or each one of these. I don't know how this eventually worked. I don't know what was allowed into this docuseries and what wasn't allowed, but I think we'd all be BSing ourselves if we didn't think Michael Jordan had the final say on everything that happened. Here's more from Horace Grant. He was asked if he leaked the famous Jordan rules.
That is a downright, outright, completely lie. Lie, lie, lie. And as I stated, if MJ had a grudge with me, let's settle it like, man, let's talk about it, or we can settle it another way. But yet and still, he goes out and put this lie out that I was the source behind. Sam and I have always been great friends. We're still great friends. But the sanctity of that locker room, I would never put anything personal out there. The mere fact that Sam Smith was an investigative reporter, that he had to have two sources, to write a book, I guess. Why would MJ just point me out? I mean, it's only a grudge, man.
You know, it is, by the way, this is kind of what you were hoping for, I guess, in a sense. This is the content we were looking for when a documentary or docuseries like this comes out. I'm not saying that I want Jordan to have grudges with all these different people, but he does have some grudges. I mean, think about it. This is a lot of what's carried this 10-part series every single week. It was the grudge against Isaiah Thomas. That's a real grudge. That was something that, you know, Isaiah Thomas had to come on First Take and on Get Up and try to defend himself. How about the grudge with Charles Barkley and that relationship? And I think a lot of people, you know, feel like it was petty that he doesn't have a relationship with Charles Barkley, who they had a relationship with for years. And a lot of that is because he was critical about his ownership, just answering too much to yes men as part of the Charlotte Bobcats organization, or the Charlotte Hornets. It's Hornets now, right? Yeah, I think it's Hornets now. But that's a lot of what this docuseries was about. And I think what I'd like to see, and I mentioned this to you, Jess, I mentioned that, how cool would it be if we got to see the other side? Like, I honestly now, I'm more curious about hearing more. Okay, is BJ Armstrong going to come out and say, you know, some of the things that kind of defend himself? Or are other players like John Paxson, Steve Kerr, Horace Grant, Dennis Rodman, Scottie Pippen, would they talk about the other side of it? You know, like if there is a different story out there that Jordan didn't tell the full story. I'm curious if that becomes the trend over the next, you know, week or so.
I mean, I think you're always going to have a demand, I think, for hearing the other side of the story. But it's, you know, Jordan is just Jordan. He's polarizing, so everyone hears him. I don't know if we'll ever see or hear from that other side of the story.
You get popular, Jess, like, you're right. Jordan is so polarizing and so big that when Horace Grant says something about Michael Jordan, it's big news. You know what I mean? Like, that's how big Jordan is. Just because you put his name in your mouth, it becomes big story.
Yeah, so, you know, there might be people trying to give up the, you know, stories. But ultimately, I think that the bond that the NBA has, and because they were such a great team and they were one side of the team won three, the other side of the team won three. And mm-hmm. It's all connected with MJ, Pip, and Michael, Phil Jackson.
Yep.
So, you know, I'm sure there's this trust between them. I don't know what happened with Horace Grant. I mean, he says that it's all BS. Jordan says another thing. Who knows what the actual truth is?
Backstory is.
Yeah, but you know, it's gonna be. I think it's just gonna be surrounded in mystery, just because it's too good to reveal the truth right now. You want to let this sit and let people like us think and talk about it, because I think there's so much more fun to the mystery. Is like, you know, what else? Like, what else happened? Or mm-hmm. you know, what about, like, I forgot. I don't know if it was Horace who also said this, or it was someone else who said, where was the video footage of, you know, players clapping back against Jordan?
He did. And that was, by the way, when he mentioned that was him. He said, no, we did clap back. We did have our opinions, but that part was not, you know, obviously wasn't included. So, okay, let's do this when we come back. Tillman for Tita, the Houston Rockets owner, had kind of a state of basketball returning, talking about a White House roundtable that he was in, plus LeBron James on Uninterrupted, where things stand with the NBA season. Let's focus on both of those when we come back. And lastly, how Major League Baseball cannot possibly screw up this opportunity when and if it comes. We'll do all that coming up next. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Curtis, I might have to take you next time. Next time I go out to the car wash. $42 for everybody else, but for you, my friend, $24.99. I'm like, well, I mean, I'm saving $17. Of course, I'm in.
I'll show you the things that you can.
You got the tricks.
Stuff
you got the tricks up your sleeve. Okay, Tillman Fertitta, Houston Rockets owner, at a White House roundtable, talking about the state of basketball returning.
Tillman, what's going to happen with basketball? Can you give us a – because I would be interested. Do you have any idea what they're doing now?
Yes. I think what they're doing is waiting to see what happens in certain states and if we're going to be able to play, making sure the virus continues to go in the right direction in the next few weeks. And I think that if things keep going the way that it's going, I think the NBA, the commissioner, Adam Silver, who's done an unbelievable job through this, and the 30 the owners, I think, will make the decision to try to start the season up again.
Will you finish the season or not?
I think that there's talk about finishing the season, playing X amount of games. The players need to play to get paid. And right now they're taking a 25% pay cut. They own 50% of our revenues, the players, unlike the other sports. And so they want that revenue and that television revenue, even if it's not the people in the stands revenue, so they can get paid.
Could you go immediately to playoffs, or is that not really possible?
I think that we would play some games just to get it going again,
right,
and create the interest, and then go right into the playoffs. But I think it'll be great for America. We're all missing sports, and everybody, you know, wants to see these great NBA teams.
All right, that was the Houston Rockets owner, Tillman Fertitta, with President Trump. So that was a White House roundtable. Trump actually asked some good questions there. All questions that are obviously revolving around what, you know, most NBA fans, what's their questions as well. So we'll continue. Listen, we've done this over the last, I know it's been plus 8 weeks now, that we have been trying to figure out, and I know it's a question for everybody, if we're going to get sports back, if NBA is going to come back, if Major League Baseball is going to return. We'll continue to do it until eventually, you know, we have games again. I will say this when it comes to baseball, and you hear Tillman talk about, the owner of the Rockets, talk about how Adam Silver has done an amazing job. He has done an amazing job. Give the man credit. Give credit where it's due. But this is the question, and I feel like the NBA, they are all united. They are pulling the rope in the same direction. There is an understanding between the players and the owners, with Adam Silver in the middle, that, okay, we respect each other. We got to do this together. We have to get the opinion of the players. If we're going to do this, and this isn't just NBA topics, NBA issues that are pertaining to COVID-19 right now, I feel like this has been the way Adam Silver has handled things since he's been commissioner for 5 years now. Okay, take that comparison and look at Major League Baseball. And if I say Rob Manfred here in Los Angeles, I don't think there's a lot of baseball fans out there that say, oh, what a leader. Oh, my gosh. I mean, this guy, when he was put in difficult circumstances and under tough predicaments, man, did he come through for Major League Baseball. No, you don't say that. You think of the 2017 cheating scandal where the Astros got away with it. You think of, you know, you could throw in the Boston Red Sox, which came out, whatever that was, 3-4 weeks ago, their scandal, where they blamed everything on a replay video guy, and they just said, everybody else, you're good to go, no problem. Nobody else knew about this. You look at Major League Baseball, and you don't feel like there's that leadership at all. Right now is a very interesting time in Major League Baseball. And it should not be a conversation, especially after yesterday's news where California, New York, Texas governors say professional sports in their states must plan on reopening without fans. But it could happen in the first week of June. When that news comes out, you're thinking, okay, got to be getting closer to sports. But I don't know if Major League Baseball is any closer to sports. I have no idea if they are. All I know is that the owners want a 50-50 split in revenue. And earlier today, John Heyman of MLB Network sent out this tweet. Says, Major League Baseball in recent talks gave the union two options. One, negotiate a new financial arrangement, something other than prorated pay for players playing games with no fans in attendance. Or two, wait until the coronavirus is clear to the point where fans can attend games. So you're telling me that we could have a scenario that plays out in Major League Baseball where the green light is given to Major League Baseball that, okay, under these conditions, and you have to follow all these health guidelines, all these safety protocols, that even under all those conditions, and they get the green light that, wait a minute, there's a chance that baseball won't be played? No. Of course that wouldn't happen. Of course, Major League Baseball and everybody that's a part of Major League Baseball, I'm not pointing the finger at just the players. I'm not pointing the finger at just the owners. And I'm not pointing the finger just at Manfred. I'm pointing the finger at everyone that's involved. It's impossible that they would be that tone deaf to not play baseball because of money issues, arguments about millions, and it's not because of COVID-19. Listen, I know I'm not known as the biggest baseball fan in the world. I know that I don't have season tickets to, you know, baseball games on a local level. I know I'm not sitting back and watching classic baseball games on a night in, night out basis. But I will tell you, as just a fan of sports and somebody that is definitely more a casual baseball fan, you lost me if you find a way not to play out this year and it had nothing to do with COVID-19, not that it had nothing to do with it. Of course, COVID-19 is the reason why we're all in this predicament and situation right now, is because we want the best and what's safest for the players, the managers, the umpires, the families, to bottom. You want safety to be the first thing that you're exploring. But if they don't play baseball and it's not because of the health part of things, it would be a disgrace for baseball. It really, really would. It really, really would. I put out this tweet a little bit earlier before the show started. Would you continue to support baseball if they did not play this season over money? Go read my tweets at Alan Sliwa. Go see what people's responses are. And they're pretty passionate about it. They're pretty adamant. Like, hell no, I'm not going to continue to support a sport that at a time where they're titled, America's game, the national pastime, a sport that is synonymous with the U.S., a sport that even played through world wars. You had some of your greats in baseball actually fight in World War II. A sport that at one point, when the tragedy happened in New York on September 11th and at the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., you had baseball that kind of helped rise the country back. You had baseball the front and the focus when it came to sports. This is their opportunity. This is as good of an opportunity as they're ever going to get. It's in this situation, this predicament, this moment where you decide that money is not going to influence whether you play the season or not. It's going to be doing it for the right reasons. Going to be doing it for the fans. Go. I know you got to negotiate your money. I know you have to take care of that. But it's impossible that the owners and the players don't figure something out. People are saying there's a lot of pressure. Buster Olney, who was on 98.7 in New York with Chris Carlin, said that they're starting to feel a lot of the pressure. They shouldn't feel pressure because they should know that they have to get it done. But if they found a way to screw it up, of course, it would be an incredible, incredible amount of pressure. All right, quick thank you to Metta World Peace. I cannot say how much I enjoyed that conversation with real as it gets. I mean, that's one of those individuals that his journey, how he got to the NBA, how he succeeded in the NBA, everything that Metta World Peace, obviously accomplished, especially with the Lakers. We know Metta as one of the most clutch players, hitting that shot, that 2010, to help the Lakers win that championship over the Boston Celtics. So I appreciate him tuning in. Tomorrow, the great Jim Hill will join the show at 7 o'clock. So make sure to tune in for that. Don't forget also, Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ will start at 6 a.m. in the morning. Sedano after that, then Will Kane, Mason and Island, and the Sliwa Show from there. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Thank you very much, whether you're listening live in your car or on the ESPN app. LA, have a great night.